Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
My next guest needs no introduction, but he deserves one nonetheless. He is the youngest life-tenured Superior Court judge in the history of the state of New Jersey. He graduated from Princeton University in 1972 and the University of Notre Dame Law School in 1975. You've watched him since 1998 as the senior judicial analyst for the Fox News Channel, and he joins us this evening on 1330 AM WEBY to talk about his latest book, A Nation of Sheep, hot off the press. Please welcome to WEBY, your turn, Judge Andrew Napolitano. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Your Honor.
Oh, hi, Renee. It's a pleasure to be on with you, and thanks so much for that very kind of introduction. Very kind of you.
Well, I have to tell you that I announced in the first hour of the program, we're now into the end of the second hour, I announced that you were coming on, and the phone lines have been ringing off the hook ever since, and we already have callers on hold. But
oh, that's very...
I am going to...
That's very flattering. You know, the reason I wrote A Nation of Sheep was to stir the pot, so to speak, to generate a debate about the relationship between human liberty and the government, and human liberty and safety. And I'm thrilled that your callers are lining up already to address these things.
Well, they are definitely lining up, and we're going to take their calls in just a second, but I'm going to take the prerogative of the host and ask you just one or two questions first. I've got pages and pages, which I know I won't get to, but that's what happens when you have a great guest on and
so
folks
kind.
Want to talk to him. But as you mentioned, you wrote this book to generate a debate about freedom, a debate, regrettably, that our government doesn't want us to have. I mean, it seems, and it seems that we have kind of, as you, from the title of your book, we've fallen in line and become a nation of sheep. And you land-based Americans in your book for looking the other way as our rights have been eroded.
Well, our rights have been seriously eroded, and the sheep in there are the people among us who willingly look the other way because they accept a satanic bargain from the government. I say satanic because when you enter into a bargain with the devil, you never win. And the bargain is simply this. The government says, give us your freedoms and we'll keep you safe. And the president says his first job and his paramount obligation is to keep us safe. Well, that's not true. If you read the Constitution, which sets forth the oath of office the president has to take, his first job is to keep us free. And then to keep us safe, to provide for the common defense. But his paramount obligation is to make sure that we still have our freedoms. If he keeps us safe but has taken away our freedoms, what's the sense of being an American if we don't have the freedoms that we grew up expecting we were going to have? And the reason we expect to have them is because they're guaranteed in the Constitution. Now look, when they wrote the Constitution, they held a debate for 3 months behind closed doors in the city of Philadelphia in a hot, sticky summer in 1787. And the debate was this. Where do our freedoms come from? Renee, this is the first chapter of my book. The big government, Alexander Hamilton, John Adams types, argued that our freedoms come from the government, that we would have no right to speak freely if the government weren't there to protect it. And since it comes from the government can take it away. Jefferson, who wasn't there, but his good friend Madison, who wrote the Constitution and who was, argued that our freedoms come from our humanity, and our humanity comes from God. Nobody said it better than Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence when he wrote that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, meaning the rights can't be taken away from us. Now, this is not just an academic argument. If our rights come from the government, then George W. Bush, with the stroke of a pen, either by signing an executive order or by signing into law legislation that the Congress has enacted, can legally take our rights away. But if our rights come from our humanity, if we were created in God's image and likeness and he is perfectly free, if our rights are as natural to us as the fingernails on the ends of our fingers, then the government can't take them away by ordinary legislation or presidential decree, but only by a jury trial after we've been convicted of interfering with someone else's rights. Now, that's the underpinning of this book. If you believe our rights come from the government, then you will disagree with everything that is in this book. If you believe that our rights come from our humanity, that our rights are natural, then you will say to yourself, why do we go along with the government taking these rights away when it doesn't have the authority to take them away?
Well, in a minute, I want to talk about how we can turn this around, how maybe we become the wolves or we become the shepherd in this nation of sheep. But before we do that, let me get to Mark. Thanks, Mark, for holding. Go ahead. It's your turn. Mark, you there? Okay, I guess call us back, Mark, and we'll take your call. When you there, Mark?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry. You have Judge Napolitano on the line.
Yes, Judge, I listen to you and Brian every day, and
I'm glad to
talk to you today. You know Mark from Pensacola, right?
Oh, you spoke with us today?
Yes, sir.
I don't remember what we talked about because we had so many callers, including that character Stephen Colbert, whom you may have
have
heard, but it's
right,
nice to hear your voice
that.
Again, my friend.
Okay, well, listen, I know your views quite well about your book, and I disagree with a lot of them on there. There are views that I do agree with. Now, I'll make you a deal. I'll buy your book, and I'll read your book if you'll answer, tell me how you feel about the Second Amendment. And some of the views I disagree with in your book is, I assume are in your book because I know your views well, is that FISA law was written in the 70s, and yet Wilson had every letter that was sent back from overseas opened and read, and there's other egregious things with Lincoln, and also in World War II there was censorship. So why all of a sudden with FISA, why is that the constitutional
basis? We'll start with the Second Amendment. In my other two books, Constitutional Chaos, What Happens When the Government Breaks Its Own Laws, and The Constitution in Exile, How the federal government has seized power by rewriting the supreme law of the land, I articulate a very, very strong defense of the Second Amendment's protection of the individual right to keep and bear arms. Look, my freedom to move my fist stops where your nose begins. And just as you have the right to use your fists to stop me, if I came after you with a gun, you have the right to use a gun to stop me. I believe that all sane adults have the right to keep and to bear arms. One of the great tragedies of modern America is that we have given the government a monopoly on the use of force. If somebody breaks into my house, the government is not going to be there in time to protect me and to stop the person who broke in from harming my family. But I, if the government let me use my gun, would clearly have enough time to get to the gun and stop this guy. It's a tragedy that the liberals who claim to love our Constitution omit the Second Amendment. Now,
well,
with respect to FISA,
we're in complete agreement on that, as we are on several other things.
I happen to think that FISA is unconstitutional because the Fourth Amendment says that only judges can issue warrants, and they can only issue warrants on probable cause. Probable cause means it is more likely than not that the subject of the warrant, the person that the government wants to seize, or the property that the government wants to search, or the conversation to which the government wants to listen, that will show that it is more likely than not that a crime has been committed. FISA changes probable cause of crime to probable cause of foreign agency. So FISA allows the government to listen to conversations on a standard less than what the Constitution requires. It's pretty black letter law, meaning law that nobody would dispute with, that the Congress can't change the Constitution. Yet in FISA, it has authorized the president to go around the Constitution.
Judge, do you think in general that the Congress is constantly trying to curtail the president's powers, and yet they have authority to curtail the Supreme Court?
I think that Congress frequently doesn't even read the laws that it enacts. I know for a fact that no member of Congress read the first Patriot Act because it was only, I'm talking about the House of Representatives now, because it was posted on the House intranet for 15 minutes, and it's 350 pages long. They had 15 minutes in which to vote on it. I spoke to a large group of folks in the Midwest. I won't tell you where, who the congressman is, the other night, Saturday night. And I was articulating my condemnation of the Patriot Act, because the Patriot Act lets federal agents write their own search warrants, even though the Constitution says only judges can issue search warrants on evidence of a criminal activity. And the Patriot Act makes it a crime for the recipient of that search warrant to tell anyone, a lawyer, a spouse, a priest in confession, a federal judge, that they got such a search warrant. This congressman came up to me and said, Judge,
I'm ashamed of myself. And I said, why? I've been socializing with this fellow all evening, except for the 40 minutes or so that I was up on stage speaking to the group. He said, I voted for both Patriot Acts. I had no idea that they permitted federal agents to write their own search warrants, and I had no idea that they made it a crime to talk to anybody about the search warrants. I said, well, didn't you read this stuff before you voted on it? And he said, no, in the case of the first Patriot Act, we weren't permitted to read it. In the case of the second Patriot Act, I just read a summary that the Justice Department gave us. It is abominable for our elected representatives to tinker with the Constitution because they each took an oath to uphold it, not evade it, not avoid it, not make it easier, not make it simpler, not cut holes in it, but uphold it. It is unthinkable that they would tinker with the Constitution without debating and without reading what they're voting on. Now, that's a long answer to your question about what kind of a role does Congress play. Congress is as bad as the president, in my view, when it comes to curtailing our natural liberties.
It's a wonderful answer. Thank you, and God bless you.
God bless you, my friend.
Thank you, Mark. We appreciate your call. Let's move off the legislative branch and on to the judicial branch. I have a question for you, obviously, with your background as a judge in federal court. What does it mean for a judge to interpret the rule of law rather than make law? And what is happening today in many courtrooms across America that you've witnessed?
Well, sometimes you want a judge to interpret the rule of law. For example, we're talking about the Fourth Amendment and searches and seizures. There's obviously nothing in the Fourth Amendment about wiretaps because the founders of the Constitution could never have contemplated the existence of phone calls or the Internet. So it's necessary when the government begins listening to somebody's phone call or capturing every keystroke without a warrant for a judge to decide, does the Fourth Amendment apply here? And the courts have interpreted, I use that word because that's the word that came from your question, the Fourth Amendment, to apply to telephone calls and to keystrokes on computers, even though they're not mentioned in the Constitution, because they are a search and a seizure. They are a search of our conversation and a seizure of our thoughts. The Fourth Amendment says search and seizure, but it obviously contemplates the search of a building and the seizure of a document.
Right.
So sometimes when we are protecting people's natural rights, the natural right here being protected is the right to be left alone, called privacy. It's necessary for the court to interpret. But I'll give you another example where it's not. A federal judge sitting in Kansas City, Missouri, one day, in the midst of a teacher strike, decided that the teachers were right and they needed more money. The city of Kansas City told the federal judge and the teachers union to go take a hike. The federal judge ordered the city to raise its real estate taxes, and he ordered the checks to be sent to him, which he deposited in the bank and then distributed to the teachers union. Now, that is an extreme, extreme example. It may be the most extreme example I know of judicial activism, which does not enhance natural liberty, but which takes power, in this case, away from the city council of Kansas City. He was eventually reversed, but not after millions of dollars had exchanged hands pursuant to his decree. He didn't take any of the money. I mean, I'm not accusing him of bribery. I'm accusing him of using his power to destroy the sovereignty of the city and to usurp the authority that rightfully belonged to the mayor and to the city council.
Certainly perfect evidence of something that you argue throughout the book, and that is, you know, you question whether anyone in government takes seriously the oath to uphold the Constitution.
Very few do. In my prior book, The Constitution in Exile, I probably cited close to 100 examples of where the Congress just runs rampant over the Constitution. You know, most people would be surprised if you asked them, how many powers does the Constitution give the Congress? They would probably guess into the thousands. I mean, after all, the Congress regulates the size of our toilet bowls, the strength of the flow of water out of our shower heads, how much sugar there is in ketchup, how many lobsters you can take out of the ocean. The Congress regulates so many intimate aspects of our lives. There's only 17 powers in the Constitution given to the Congress since day one. Since the first Congress under President George Washington, they've been trying to and succeeding in enacting legislation that exceeds the powers that they get. Why? Because people like me and Congressman Walter Jones of North Carolina and Connie Mack of Florida and Ron Paul of Texas are atypical. Most people in the government are big government do-gooders, busybodies who think they know what's better for us than what we know for ourselves, and they want to use the power of the government to regulate our private lives. Very few people, like the names of the folks I just mentioned, believe in the Republican Party of Senator Barry Goldwater. Shrink the government. Get it out of people's faces. Let the free market and the states handle these things. The federal government only exists for those 17 truly federal purposes.
Love it. Love it. We are talking with Judge Andrew Napolitano about his new book, A Nation of Sheep. The phone lines are lit up. Judge Napolitano, can we take a very short break? And then when I come back, I want to take some of the calls. And then I want to talk about Ron Paul and this prediction that some are making you might become a running mate.
I'll be happy to chat with you. Take that break. You got to pay your bills.
We do. We'll be right back after this short break.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's talk radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
We've got about 5 minutes left with Judge Andrew Napolitano. If you've got a question for him, please call us at 850-623-1330. You can also visit his website, judgenap.com, to learn more about Judge Napolitano and his views, and also to learn more about his brand new book, Hot Off the Press, called A Nation of Sheep. Thanks for coming back with us, Judge Napolitano.
Oh, my pleasure, Renee.
Okay, and thanks for holding, Bill. Go ahead. It's your turn.
Yeah, Judge, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The statement you made about the Second Amendment, I go for all the way. Is it, maybe you can straighten me out, is it the deal of the government to protect, not to protect the citizens, but to protect the government?
It's like
the police department. They're not really there to protect the citizens.
It's the job of
the
Constitution
government property
to limit the government.
You see where I'm coming from?
If members of Congress who took an oath to uphold the Constitution followed that oath, they wouldn't enact any legislation that is not specifically authorized by the Constitution. They wouldn't interfere with your Second Amendment rights. They wouldn't interfere with your First Amendment rights. They wouldn't interfere with your Fourth Amendment rights. They wouldn't be regulating the economy. They wouldn't be federalizing education, as George Bush had them do. They wouldn't be federalizing Medicare, as George Bush had them do. They wouldn't be doing any of these things that are not in the Constitution. The Second Amendment has been the one that the left has sought to overlook for the past 60 years, since the Supreme Court wrote an awful opinion in 1934 that basically said the federal government can regulate guns, notwithstanding the Second Amendment. I predict that that opinion will be reversed by this Supreme Court. The feds will have nothing to do with guns. It will be up to the states, and even states like New Jersey, my home state, where it's almost impossible to get a carrier permit, will be forced to follow the federal right, and we'll have to protect it.
Well, I hope you're right, Guy, and thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks, Bill. Well, all right, you brought it up, predictions. Let's enter into that realm. You've called Ron Paul the Thomas Jefferson of today, and some predict that you will be the running mate for Ron Paul should he receive the nomination. Judge Napolitano, what do you think of that idea?
Well, I think that my bosses at Fox, with whom I have just signed a new four-year contract, might have something to say about that. It is deeply flattering. He is literally the Thomas Jefferson of our day, because he, more than anybody else in government, understands the Constitution and understands the role that the federal government was intended to play in our lives. And not only does he understand it, he acts upon it. He is as courageous as the day is long. He's not afraid to say no when the people that run the Republican Party insist that other things should be done. He is a dream come true for those of us who believe in maximum individual liberty, a small central government, and wars only to defend, not to attack somebody else. If Ron Paul succeeds in becoming president, the IRS will be gone, taxes will be far lower, the states will have a lot more authority, and you'll be able to do like Ronald Reagan said, vote with your feet. If you want to live where abortions can occur up to the moment of birth, go to New Jersey. If you want to live where there's small government and maximum individual liberty, go to New Hampshire. You'll be able to do that because there'll be less central control than there is today. And if Ron Paul doesn't win, he may be the Barry Goldwater to someone else's Ronald Reagan, by which I mean he may have coalesced a movement of those of us from both parties who believe that the individual is greater than the state. He's made it acceptable to make that argument. And I'll give you a figure that will tantalize you. More than 50% of the financial contributions coming from active duty members of the military, more than half, are going to Ron Paul. I wonder if those guys in the military know something that we don't.
Very interesting. Very interesting. The book is interesting as well. Buy the book. It is called A Nation of Sheep. It's by Judge Andrew Napolitano, Fox News Channel's senior judicial analyst. You can hear him on the radio as well. The book is called A Nation of Sheep. Visit his website as well at judgenap.com. Judge Napolitano, thank you so very much for joining us this afternoon. Again, we're going to post this interview on our website at www.cfif.org. If you haven't had a chance to tune in for the entire interview, you can hear it in a couple weeks by clicking on the link to the audio version. Buy the book called A Nation of Sheep. Judge Napolitano, thank you again for your time this afternoon.
Thanks, Renee, and God bless all your good listeners.
Okay, we appreciate it very much. Well, thank you to all the listeners who tuned in this afternoon to this version of Your Turn, the program that I've dubbed Meeting Nonsense with Common Sense. Again, our guests this afternoon, Commissioner Don Salter and Bill Everett, talking about all the Veterans Day affairs that'll be going on, A Nation of Sheep, Judge Napolitano, and 50 Rules Your Kids Won't Learn in School.